Welcome to the Dellingpod with me, James Dellingpod. And I know I always say I'm excited about this week's special guest, but I really, really am excited. And I'm hoping that this podcast will be an improvement on the sound quality of the last one we did. I've got Ole Damagud back for a second time. Ole, thank you for agreeing to do this again. I'm sorry about the sound disaster we had last time. I've been doing some homework since our last podcast. I spent a chunk of yesterday listening to you talking about the extraordinary story of Olaf Palme and the alleged assassination and don't worry, I know you need about 3 hours to tell that story. But that was your way in, wasn't it, to the rabbit hole?
No, not at all.
Right.
I was JFK was the first one that I really. I remember the night it happened. It was 1980, and I went to my sister in Stockholm, and they had got satellite TV. You know, so it was for us, it was like, whoa, incredible, like more than just two channels. And so I was lying in the middle of the night, and there was this documentary about the JFK assassination. And it was the first time I saw the Zapruder movie the Zapruder film, where you see the film of the assassination itself, where it is very clear that the final headshot is hitting him, throwing him back and to the left. Meaning normal physics. I mean, I normally use what I call Farmer Brown logic, like 1 + 1 = 2. If anyone tries to convince me that it's 34, I know they're doing it for a purpose. And I also know that it's just not true. And here we're being told that the shooter was on the sixth floor behind him, up and to the right. And yet his head is thrown back and to the left. So it's just normal physics. If I throw a snowball at you, your head will be thrown back in the away from the direction where the snowball comes from. So it was like, it took me like 4.5 seconds to understand something is really wrong here. And because very obviously the shooter or shooters or whoever they were must have been in the front and to the right, at least for the last shot. So but what really got to me is at that time I just started out as a journalist. I was a young journalist in a local newspaper. And it really got to me that heavyweight people that I was looking up to, you know, like legends in the journalistic world, the media world, like Dan Rather and all kinds of heavyweights, were backing the official story, which was so easy to see in one glimpse that that's bullshit. That can just not happen, you know. So I started going down the JFK rabbit hole, and it just turned out to be so multi-levered and extremely intricate and detailed. And so I got I got obsessed with it. If I admitted to it, I got obsessed with trying to understand it because it was just so confusing to me. And so over the years, because I spent, I read a couple of hundred books about it. I saw all documentaries that were available. I went to England trying to find the film producer of The Men Who Killed Kennedy, Nigel Turner, incredible series of documentaries. I went to the US trying to track down some of the witnesses and so on. So, I mean, I really tried to find out, and in the end I wrote a book about it, but it was a book for myself. It was just to try and categorize all of the things in the right order and so on. And what came to me was that I started finding out that, you know, in this book that is very credible as far as I can see it, a certain individual was working for the CIA, where in another book where the author was very credible, the same person was working as a hitman for the mob. And in a third book, a very credible book, the same person was being paid off and was working for the FBI. And I was like, this is so weird, because one must be correct and the other one are not correct. Turn out they were all correct. And this was the entry point for me to get into this world of smoke and mirrors, into the world of these agencies, how they carry out operations, how it's an enigma inside a labyrinth, inside a, you know, it's just incredibly complex, and it's done like that by design. And many, many times the same people are working for one of these agencies like the CIA, but they're also involved with the mob because they've been recruited maybe from the mob or from the police force or whatever. They've been corrupt enough to be used in these operations, and also by the FBI. Because very often these operations are set up so that the FBI are preparing the patsy, whoever is going to take the fall for it, without that person knowing it. They're preparing all the evidence, everything that would be used once the shot is fired, to point out that was the one, this is the person who did it. And also the FBI are the ones that move in right after the things have happened and clean up the area from real evidence and just plant all the evidence pointing in whatever direction that they want. That's the FBI. The CIA are often the ones in these operations that are planning it, coordinating the whole thing, getting the funds into through the black ops ways into these assassinations and carrying it out with assassins that they deliver or that they use in the 60s, especially from the mob. They were using people because officially they couldn't work nationally inside the US borders. They were only for on the international side. But the CIA have since long become this monster that is beyond control for any so-called president or anyone like that. So very often they took in violent elements, but very skilled people that were totally ruthless from the mob to carry out their dirty work, also so that they had full deniability, that it couldn't be tracked back to them. So it's the same coin, but from different sides. So you have the CIA, the mob, the FBI, the whole shebang is just one big mess of pushed together so that we think that they're different, but they're not. It's just, so that was the thing that got me into this world of assassinations. And then I started getting into the world, the assassination of Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy. At that point, I had no idea that there were any connections whatsoever between these. I thought totally independent cases that were in no way or form connected. And then I started seeing, it seemed like there was some kind of blueprint being used to carry out these operations, including a patsy that would be blamed in the eye of the public. It would also always be a lone, crazy individual. The reason why they wanted him alone, because then by law, it would be treated like not a conspiracy, where there's more than two people involved in criminal planning or activity, but a single one, then you don't have to look into it. And crazy, because they didn't want us to look into any type of motive for the reason behind this violent crime, whatever it was. So alone and crazy. And then the investigation would be part of the crime as well, so that you had both control over the assassins, but also the media outlet, which is very, very vital in these operations, so that you can control whatever flow of information in whatever direction you want. And then also they need to be in control of the coroners, the judges, the lawyers, the DAs. And this normally they use the Freemasonic network so that they bring in their own brothers into these things. And then this is then for the investigation itself is put there only to cover the whole thing up. They are never interested in the real truth. On the contrary, so you will see from day one, they will be pointing towards the official narrative. The patsy, the patsy, the patsy, the patsy. Anything that goes against that will be suppressed, will be, people will be threatened, they won't be heard, they will be, you know, sometimes killed, sometimes taken care of, terrified, intimidated, to shut up, shut up, shut up. That's the investigation itself. And then it will never come to any other conclusion than the official story. If we keep pushing and they can't keep the lid on completely, they will let out a little, throw us a little bone towards the real truth. But it would just be a tiny little thing saying, okay, but look over there. Yes, we're really trying to, but they're not. It's like they're just scratching on the surface saying, there you go, that was it. And by the way, it was the Patsy. And if we do not accept that whole thing, then they will just appoint a committee. They will give it a fancy name like the Truth and Reconciliation, Stardust, blah, 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 committee. That will then spend about a year of and about $1 million of our tax money into doing zero, absolutely zero. They will have all of these long meetings. I tell you, they will, many of times they will be snorting coke and having prostitutes in the background. They will come out from time to time looking not shaven, saying, we're really working very, very hard. We're trying everything we can. Bollocks, bollocks, bollocks. Not a true word there. And then in the end, they would present like 1,000 pages thick stack of papers packed with what looks like facts. But when you really start going through it, it will say nothing. And it will point towards the Patsy. They will say, well, the investigation made a mistake here, 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 and here. Otherwise, they were doing great. And so, thank you so much. That was it. And off we go out to the right. So we then are left with a pack of like that, with, like $1 million less in tax money. And just being given, well, now we've done everything. The investigation did what they could. They found the Patsy. But you don't accept it, even though he was guilty. And they were often suicided on site, which is what they do. So they don't have to, it's case closed right away. But otherwise than that, now we put a commission there for you to believe. And if we don't believe it, they will just say, well, in that case, we will just appoint another commission. And then the commission, the second commission, will look into the first commission, who looked into the investigation, who did not look into the crime. And the investigation or the commission number two will spend like one more year, more prostitutes, more cocaine, throwing darts, playing with their belly button, doing zero. And then they come up with a stack of papers saying absolutely nothing. The first commission did really well. They made a mistake here, 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 but they pointed out the mistakes that the investigation had done here, 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 here. We've done great, and here, there you go. Thank you so much, and off we go. And the people in these commissions are very often just switching places. So if there's a big scandal that needs to be covered up, they will very often have sort of like a team of people. Most of them Freemasons, more or less always Freemasons. They will come in, they will be appointed to this commission. You will not be able to see, if you're not a geek like me, that, my God, I recognize that guy from that commission and this one. My God, where? I mean, he just popped up again because they have like one person, the head of the commission, and then they just do like this. It's a game, it's an illusion. And so, like you mentioned the assassination on Olof Palme, we had four, I kid you not, four commissions, and they're still back to square one saying it was the Patsy, it was the Patsy. Now they come up with a new Patsy who just happened to have been dead since the year 2000. So unfortunately, well, what can we do? He died. So now they're doing everything they can to blame it on this guy that was totally innocent. And yeah, the first one was also innocent before he got murdered or died by accident. So it's like it's a dark area to get into. But that then took me into when I started seeing that there was actually a blueprint being used, like a bullet point list of how to carry out these operations. I was like, this is unbelievable, because how can they be using the same setting if they're not connected? And that's when I started seeing from a higher point of view, oh my God, check it out. And so I started seeing the same forces, the exact same forces, the exact same players behind JFK, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy. We are talking about the exact same individuals in the background, same forces, same money flow, the whole shebang set up. They're just like trying to do like a boom, 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 up against Mike Tyson, game over right away. And then The Swedish Prime Minister, Olof Palme, was allegedly shot dead in 1986, which was 6 years down the road from me. And I thought, I didn't like him at all. He was quite a nasty fellow, if you ask me. But anyway, he officially died. And so I thought, I was born in Denmark, grew up in Sweden. I thought Sweden is this amazing country, you know, yeah. This island in the world, no corruption. Everything is true and pure and fantastic. And so, of course, the Swedish police will find the guy like this, boom. And that's it. And then that didn't happen. Instead, I started seeing the exact same setup like was being used in these other cases on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. So I was like, this is bizarre. This is bizarre. So I started seeing, you know, from based on all of these thousands of hours I had in the other cases, where I've never seen this bullet point list printed out or in any book or so. It's only by observing how they carried out that I made them myself. And I think it comes from the old Romans, actually, how they were the ones that came up with these methods of how to control the population, how to get rid of opposition and blame it on a patsy. If you need to kill someone, then you have to set it up so that people don't understand that it's actually you who are doing it. So anyway, so in Sweden, when this happened, after a year or so, I was like, this is unbelievable, because I couldn't see how can they in any way be connected. This is an assassination in Sweden that has nothing to do with the rest of the world. As far as naive me was concerned, I couldn't see it. And then, I looked at the bullet point list from the other cases, and it was just like, it had followed like boom, 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 boom. So I said, if I'm correct, then within the next 2-3 weeks, this will happen. The next bullet, I can't remember what it was. And then it happened in Sweden. I tell you, shattering for my image of the world and of Sweden, the country I grew up in. It was like somebody had pulled the rug away underneath me, because I was just like, how is this possible? And so I left my job. I moved to Stockholm. I became right in the center of the private investigation. There were like a bunch of very concerned citizens, a group of like 20 of them, who were really dedicating themselves trying to find out what the hell happened in Sweden, what happened to this beautiful country, because it's something is going on that is really, really bad. And so I got myself into that whole area. I was driving a bus. I was working crap jobs. Just to be able to really dig into this whole thing. And I was in this for 12 years. I've written a book called Coup d'etat in Slow Motion with all of the names, all of the everything you want to know about that, but also how it's connected on an international level into the assassination of JFK, Marilyn Monroe, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, John Lennon, you name it. So many connections with these people, the same people, also the assassination of Bob Marley and things like that, where people think that it's, oh, he just died from cancer. Well, yeah. Did he really? And then you start looking into it and, oh my God. So
do you think,
there you go. So it wasn't the Swedish.
You just prompted a thought. Anthony Bourdain, the celebrity chef, do you think, he was supposed to have committed suicide, but do you reckon?
I know too little to say anything for sure. I don't to say anything about a case if I'm not absolutely well studied in that area. There were very suspicious things around that death, just as there is for so many others. And the way that also the last 5-6 years, so many have been found strangled from a doorknob.
Yes.
I mean, I don't even know how that is possible. And so it's like, and they say, I mean, if you're depressed and you want to commit suicide, do you look at the doorknob and say, yeah, that's where I'm going to do it. I don't get it. But there's a handful of celebrities in the area, many of them that have been standing up and saying, this is not okay. I'm going to speak out. And then suddenly they end up dead, hanging from a doorknob. And so I find that very odd. But there are many times in these deaths, there's a ritual involved, a very dark ritual where, yes, and many often that is the explanation behind these bizarre ways of dying is that it's actually a ritual, a very often very dark satanic ritual that has been carried out.
Right. Well, so what? I mean, I can't imagine what kind of satanic ritual would be that would involve hanging yourself on a doorknob. How does that work?
It's very symbolic. It's if you go into the world of the Illuminati, of the Freemasons, they have all kinds of bizarre stuff. Where you know, like just like when you, if you look at Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
That case where we're being told that it was one person, it was not. There were three people involved, and the way these women that was that were blackmailing the royal family, it's a big, big case, that whole thing. But the way that these women were killed were in a Freemasonic ritual, you know, where they were cut up, open, where their intestines were hang up, they're thrown over the left shoulder. All of these things. When you go to the Freemasonic rituals. When people are getting up into the ranks, in the different higher ranks up in the Freemasonic pyramid of power or whatever you want to call it, in these rituals, they have to swear loyalty and they have to go through these rituals where they're told, you know, they even have a sword towards their heart. They're standing naked. They're in a coffin, masturbating while having to scream out all their inner secrets while somebody is standing in the background writing everything down so it can be used as blackmail in the future. These rituals are then being carried out, but in front of us. But since we don't know the background of these things, we just think, oh my God, it's a bizarre crime. Somebody's absolutely crazy. No, they're not. They're just following. This is how we do it. And it's also to make people terrified who is in the know so that they shut up as well.
Right. You all the assassinations you've mentioned so far have taken place in America. Does the British deep state engage in assassinations like that?
Is that a question or a joke?
Well, I was hoping you might give me some examples.
Okay, so one thing that I find I think is important to understand is that what looks like separate agencies on the street level, you got like MI6, MI5, CIA, BOSS, Mossad, these type of agencies, they look like they're separated, but the higher up you come in the power pyramid, they get more and more and more and more connected. And at the top, they're the same. So they're using these agencies, depending on where the target is, they just use whatever part in that case. And then they involve the local agency, also the local police, wherever the target happens to be. So they use the local agencies. They use the Gladio network as well, with the backup of the hardened, I don't know what to call them. They're almost like soldiers of fortune, but it's the Gladio network, the NATO Gladio network is very, very important to understand when you look at many of these things, because it's an invisible ghost army, but that is where a lot of these things are carried out.
Right, right. I mean, presumably Diana was one of those, Princess Diana.
Diana, for sure, her death was not natural. It was not an accident. There is a layer to that that case that confuses me, and because it's like you got the official story, as soon as you start really looking into it, it will smell a long wave of bullshit on steroids. It makes no sense whatsoever. It, you know, the whole accident thing, absolutely not true. Paparazzi, not true at all. You will see that the whole, they could never, ever, there were so many things that happened that is just so, such a clear sign of black ops. You know, like there were 14 of all of these CCTV cameras, 14 in a row that didn't work exactly on the night where this car was driving. So we have no footage whatsoever. And right after the accident, again, switched on, boom. That's standard procedure. But that is not something that a lone assassin can control. It's not something that paparazzis can cause or anything like that. Paparazzis in this case were the patsy. They were the one being blamed for it. It was a hit. It was a hit, a military type precision operation where they took her out. But, and you can also see, you know, the time it took for them to take, she was not in any way or form stuck in the car, even though the car was smashed up. She could easily be taken out of the car and brought into the ambulance and taken to the emergency, you know, like it should have been in lightning speed. She was only one of the most famous people in the world, one of the most worshipped celebrities in the world. You would think that maybe we should put sort of like, speed it up. That would be the natural thing. Here we see the exact opposite. It took, as far as I remember, 43 or 47 minutes for her to be taken from the Alma Tunnel to the hospital. Did they take the nearest hospital? No. They took another one. But it's still 43 minutes. It's absolutely unheard of to do that stretch. I mean, unbelievable. And then the ambulance stopped outside a few hundred meters from the entrance to the emergency ward here, and stood there for some minutes while it was sort of, people said it was rocking like that. And it seems like that is where her inner, she wasn't mortally wounded in this or injured in this crash, apparently, but she had inner bleedings. But it seems like in the ambulance that they were making sure that these injuries were so advanced or so serious that once she arrived to the hospital, she died more or less very, very urgently. And also, you will see that there were people at the hospital. It's been a while since I looked into this case, but yeah. As far as I remember, both from French security and also English security, these agencies were waiting at the hospital for her to arrive. But then you have very odd things after also, as soon as she died, if I remember right, she was cremated right away, you know, and against the will of the family, the closest family. And these are also super signs of somebody trying to cover it up. You know, do not look into this, get rid of the evidence, boom, take her out, burn them, cremate them, throw them out at sea, whatever. And then afterwards, oh, we're really sorry. We didn't know that you cared, you know, so. And I don't say this easily, but there are a lot of rumors that she might still be alive. There is a whole new level to that thing, and I know people will shake their heads now and say, "Come on, what is he talking about?" I tell you, there are rumors, and I seem to have gathered quite a lot of evidence in at least one case, and that is again around JFK Jr., who died also not long after her. And these two, there are things pointing towards them knowing that both of them were targeted to be taken out because they were just getting too popular. I mean, like Diana, it had very little to do with the Muslim baby or this thing. That was not the reason. If I'm correct, the main reason for them to take her out was that once she knew way too much about what was going on inside Buckingham Palace. That's a dark place for you if you want to go. And also number two, landmines. She started these campaigns against landmines, and landmines are crucial when it comes to black ops all over the world, in wars, and also the way they use the landmines to clear areas so that they say that, oh, it was because the guerrilla was here, or absolute not true. The guerrillas very often, or the Mujahideen, they didn't have millions of mines. They were not the ones spreading it out there. It is these forces that go in and mine the whole area so that the local population backs out and disappears from that, so that they get that area to themselves. And you will see very, very often these areas are being used, either poppy fields, drugs is key in this thing. You got oil, gas, it can be gas line, gas pipes that are being assembled without we seeing what's actually going on. Or it is because of the strategic position, so that they have secret airstrips in this area. So they put landmines in there, many times disguised as toys, so that the children of the local population picks it up, boom, get without a leg or a head or whatever. And the population, of course, get terrified. And so they leave the area. Oh, and then we have to go in. It will take them six years to clear the area. It's such a, so horrible. No, absolutely not. It gives them 6 years to do whatever they want in that area, at least, because they will also be messing with the people trying to clear up the area if that operation is still ongoing. So landmines are key in so many of these operations. And here came the most loved woman in the world, who stepped right into this nest and said, stop it. I am going to point to these things because they're horrible. Many of them manufactured in Sweden, neutral Sweden. This is what you can get from me. This is awful. Shame, shame, shame on that. A country that is neutral and have some of the most advanced weapon technology manufactured in their own country. I mean, really? Oh, my God. Anyway, hypocrisy on a level that is unbelievable. So when she went in there, she reached an audience around the world, mostly of women, that are normally not interested in politics. I mean, they are not a problem normally for these operations. But here, millions and millions and millions of women adored Diana. Mm. And so when she said, we have to stop this, it was not Diana. It was an army of engaged women. And when women really get going, oh, my God, that, and especially mothers, you don't want to mess with mothers, I tell you that. So that is why she was stopped. And Kennedy, JFK Jr., he knew that he was a target. I mean, he started with politics. It was just a matter of time. He would have been chosen president like this. Had he run for office, the whole Camelot legacy would have just brought him straight to that area. And he knew it. He would be dead before he got halfway. And so there's quite a lot of things pointing towards him actually planning his exit. It's because the only way they can survive a thing, an operation like that, is to create their own death and get themselves off this death list. So in 1999, he made this exit. There are many clues in his magazine, George. By the way, George, that's an odd name for a magazine, but what he was targeting was George Bush Sr., who was the paymaster of Operation 40, which was a major part of the assassination team that took out his father and his uncle, Robert Kennedy. And he was targeting George Bush, saying, I am going to expose you. But he knew also that he would never make it alive. So that's why he backed out. And there's quite a few things that seems like he's back here. He's doing interviews, but under another name. He's really exposing a lot of the things that have been going on, that are going on. And also sometimes leaving clues that he and Diana are standing in the background just waiting for the right time to step forward. Can you imagine this beautiful, beautiful couple, these two of the most beautiful people in the world, if they step forward and say, listen, let's turn this around. It's time to stop the madness and just heal this world in a beautiful way. Can you imagine how many people that would get up, snap out of the spell and say, oh my God, maybe we have to do something.
Only that is next level stuff, and exactly why I love
it. I know. Normally I don't say anything about it.
No, well, but it's interesting.
I actually received an email from what seems to be Junior. I don't know. Encrypted, super encrypted, but with a thank you message and the whole, yeah. So
it's
there you go.
It's interesting you raise this stuff, because I think the one person who's even deeper down the rabbit hole than you, and I'm not sure whether to trust him or not, or whether he's a real person or a number of people, you've come across Miles Mathis. You read any of his stuff? I mean, Mars Mathis sort of seems to imply that a lot of the what we think of as assassinations are actually faked deaths, and that these people are alive. And I suppose the recent example of that would be Anne Hesh. Is that how you pronounce her name? Where people, you know, yeah. there's the kind of the official version. She died in a car crash and she got burned. And then there's the kind of conspiracy theory base entry level version, which is look at the aerial footage of the supposed body on the stretcher suddenly sitting bolt upright. And then there's the kind of the uber conspiracy level, which is, yes, this was this was all shown to fool you into thinking it was she's dead when in fact she's alive.
Yep. It was that one question. Okay, let's go for miles.
Just roll. If you,
I mean, normally I don't badmouth people, but Miles, I thought when people started sending me stuff and saying, please have a look at that, it was like, it didn't match up with anything of the way I see things at all. And then he was kind enough to make an article totally debunking me. There's a whole way he goes through my whole life. So if he's correct, then you shouldn't have invited me, because then I don't know. It's like massive research not that he's made where he's just totally debunking me. So anyway, what I find with, you know, it's super important not to jump to conclusions in my world. You have to really take it step by step by step and not just Google stuff. This is why I normally try when I'm not on Bali to try to go on location and see for myself, because it is such a different experience when you, for instance, you go to Dealey Plaza on a video where Kennedy was assassinated. You think it's massive. I was one of the speakers. I've been three times a speaker at the Dallas JFK assassination conference. It's a small, tiny little place. It's not big at all. So the Charlie Hebdo, you think, oh my God, all of these things happened. They were running around shooting. You go on location. It's a narrow little street. It's like, and so often this is exactly it. They take a small little location that they can control without people really noticing what is going on. So that's why it's very good to go and see for yourself. And a lot of these things, you know, it's also, they say, okay, look at the ears of JFK. He was the grandson of Abraham Lincoln, who came from the same bloodline like Godzilla. It's like, what? What? It's like, for me, it's like all over the place. And all the time, the conclusion is, it didn't happen, it didn't happen, it didn't happen. And so sometimes it didn't happen. Sometimes it didn't happen. And sometimes they were staged. Sometimes they were real assassinations or mass shooting. And many times they were fake. So it's really tricky. And sometimes there is what I call a hybrid, where you have, it's a staged event with crisis actors, but also real people are getting killed. So it's like a combo of the two, which makes it even more complex. So it's a tricky world to get into. So unfortunately, in my way of seeing it, I say zero credibility, but that's me personally. So please make up your own mind. What was the next question?
It was about Anne Hesh. What have you got any thoughts
Anne
on
Hesh.
That?
Okay, so Anne Hesh. Oh God, yeah. I make a monthly newsletter that you can go to lightonconspiracies.com. It was under attack 2-3 weeks ago. I'm still trying to recover it because we've been messed with big time again. And anyway, so lightonconspiracies.com, go to newsletter, sign up for that one. And every month I give like an extreme detailed description of what I see happen that month of so-called false flag operations and so on. And it's unbelievable what's going on at the moment. It's just nonstop, boom, boom, boom. And please, when you look at these things, you have to look from a helicopter point of view, where, and also keep NATO in mind. These are NATO countries where these things are being operated. The same group moving from one country to the other, boom, 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 often carrying out more or less the same operation. Color-coded, they're purple or magenta, and they always leave shoes on site. They leave shoes in the center image of images like that. We can come back to that. But anyway, so to understand what is going on with the Ukraine, with so many of these other things, you have to understand many times we're being tricked. It's an illusion. They're trying to persuade us to believe something that is not true. The reason they need to do all of these psychological operations is because if we understood how few that is behind the curtain, the Wizard of Oz, and how many we are, how powerful we are, and how weak they are, it would be total disaster for them, because we pull the curtain, we see, oh my God, they're only a handful, this is a joke, let's go and have a beer and forget about all of this. We're not going to do and respect anything of what you say. You've been lying to us all of this time. Really? I don't think so. So they need to keep us in this fear mode, because it's only when we're afraid that they can control us. So they need to hammer us with fear all the time. Fear, 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 fear. So, Anne Heche. There was a movie called Wag the Dog. I cannot recommend it enough. It is with Dustin Hoffman and Robert De Niro and Anne Heche. In that movie, they describe exactly how these forces are operating. And in the movie Wag the Dog, I can say it again, please watch Wag the Dog. In it, I'll describe what is happening. It more or less describes the Monica Lewinsky event in the White House with Bill Clinton. Did he get a blowjob or did he not? If you can remember that one. Okay. So Wag the Dog was actually based on that, it seemed, but it was released 1 month before the Monica Lewinsky incident. So go and have a think about that one. That is another level of this whole thing. Anyway, so in the movie, we have this president who couldn't keep his fingers off this young woman in the White House. And this was like 2 weeks before the election, upcoming election. So a big scandal was about to erupt, because the opponent was starting to hammer the press with info about this scandal. So not good, not good, and not good for the sitting president, who looks a little bit like Clinton. Anyway, so the White House is in panic mode, and they call in this anonymous-looking guy, Robert De Niro, who is sort of a fixer. Whatever the problem, call him. I don't even think that you hear his name in the whole movie. Anyway, he's a very anonymous type guy who just comes in and he says, okay, calm down, calm down. Now, first of all, let's get the president the hell out of here. He's too stupid. Don't let him say anything. Put him on a plane. Send him to China. Say he's got a cold, that he can't give any comments and so on. And let's regroup. Okay, so they get the president out of the way. Boom, he goes to China. In the meantime, Robert De Niro says, okay, we need a diversion. We need to divert the attention away from this scandal. So how do we do it? And so he comes up with this idea. We are going to manufacture a war against Albania. And the people in the White House, and Heche is the person in charge of the whole thing, but from the White House point of view. So, but and all of them are like, what do you mean? We don't have a problem with Albania. He says, I know, but who cares? It doesn't matter. It's a matter of what we can persuade people to believe. So the way they do it is that he said, let's call for an urgent press conference, call in all the international media to the White House. And so they do it. And the guy who's doing the press conference has an earpiece. So Robert De Niro is more or less speaking to him, saying, okay, so thank you so much for coming on a short notice. We just want to say there's absolutely no truth to any rumors about aggression from Albania towards the US. There are no truths to any building up conflict between these two nations. Absolutely nothing. That the rumors that the army and the navy and the air force are all being on high alert, not true. And by the way, all of the rumors about the B3 bombers are just not true. So thank you and have a nice day. So the press are like, what do you mean? Conflict with Albania? We haven't heard anything. And what in, the B3 bomber, what is that? And he says, well, like I say, it's absolutely not true, which is true because it's absolutely not true. Nothing of it is true. But the media is like, no smoke without fire. And so they start looking in. And in the meantime, the White House activates their army, the Navy, the Air Force and whatever, so that they're on high alert. It just means that, boom, stand by on high alert. Okay, thank you so much. There's no conflict. But the newspapers, they found, oh, the army, there must be something. And so that gives them a little time. So Robert De Niro then takes the next step, and he contacts Dustin Hoffman, who in the movie is a famous Hollywood producer, and says, come on in. And they have a chat, and Robert De Niro says, listen, we need to take it to a whole new level. So we need to manufacture a war that doesn't exist, but so that the people too, for the, you know, for the American flag and the whole patriotism, and save the world. So Robert did, Dustin Hoffman said, oh, great, I'm in. So they start filming a lot of green screen things that are where they're creating war scenes with green screen, with the screaming, girls and a kitten, you know, it's always the cats, they love kittens, that's the way to get the emotions going. They add like machine gun fire in the background, they have all of these things going on, boom, and this is directly, and here, breaking news from Albania, you know,
yeah.
This is what just happened. It didn't, nothing happened, but they were pointing that one, and so we need to get it to the next level. How are we going to do it? We need a hero. They always need a hero. So they say, who are we going to get? It needs to be something with a shoe. I'm going to come back to the shoe. But the shoe is a global mind control fear trigger. That is what it is. Let's talk about that later. But anyway, so it has to do something with shoe. So they're looking for someone whose name is shoe. Shoe is shoe. And so he finds Schumacher, which is German for shoemaker. And this guy who's in a real war, a veteran, war veteran, they say, oh, this guy is perfect. So they call him in. He's totally messed up in the head. He's a psycho. He's played by Woody Harrelson. By the way, Woody Harrelson's real dad was involved in the JFK assassination. He was not one of the shooters, but he was there in Dealey Plaza. He is the long tramp, the tall tramp of the three tramps. Anyway, so Woody Harrelson is called back, but it's like they can't control him. He's totally unreliable. And in the meantime, also, they call in Willie Nelson, and they say, okay, we need a song, you know, something that can really get into the mind of people. So, and Willie Nelson is in the background with his old guitar trying to find something. And then he comes up with a song, Old Shoe, the Old Shoe. So they say, okay, let's make this as a, you know, like one of these old records, like in the old days. So it goes, and then they put it into the archive so that anyone that would look into it, like me, will see, oh, this is a song from 1918. Absolute bullshit. It was recorded there, but they were just pumping it in there. And so this song, they pump it out, and then also with the images of the old shoe, the hero are coming home. And then they also, to start a whole propaganda movement, Robert De Niro and Dustin Hoffman drives around throwing up shoes so that they land up over the telephone lines and stuff. So the whole nation are getting going like that, throwing up shoes, and they're singing this old shoe, and they're all the shoe. And anyway, then the president comes home and managed to make peace with Albania. He becomes a hero because he managed in record time to stop this conflict that didn't exist. Isn't it amazing? And he managed to get reelected. What does that? They're telling us exactly this is how we're doing it. This is how we're doing it. And like I said before, that whole thing was based on Monica Lewinsky. But the Monica Lewinsky event happened 1 month after the release of the movie. Please right. keep this in mind with the movie releases. They have these movie releases over and over and over again. So what does that tell you? That tells you, at least someone like me, that maybe Monica Lewinsky was not real, that was a psychological operation as well, because the first year after the Monica Lewinsky thing, where that whole thing kept media for months looking to the left. Did he or did he not? That was outside the courthouse or outside the White House, media was there camping for months, not looking at anything else. Keep that as a warning thing. As soon as the media is saying, look over here, we have to check 360 degrees around in the background. What the hell are they up to? Because they're trying, just like an illusionist, to make us look over here. So during the first year after that movie was released, USA, at very specific points where this case was being brought up again, you know, is it going to go to court or not? There, three times they hit, they sent, I think, 70 missiles to different targets in Sudan, which is they're not at war at all. They were hitting different things, very strategic targets. The U.S. were hitting these on an innocent country. The second target was Syria, as far as I remember, and the third one was in Kosovo. In 1 year, boom, boom, boom. When we were looking that way, oh, Monica, that way, and people in the press were saying, hey, this is bizarre. This is actually exactly like in the movie. They're telling us. Do you remember we talked once about why do they need to tell us? They're telling us these dark forces because of the law of karma. They're terrified of the law of karma. And the way they see it is if they show us, even in subtle ways, what they're up to, and we don't react, then indirectly we can send the bad karmas on our shoulders. We should have done something, not their shoulders. So that's why they pump it out there. They pump. The bigger the operation, the more they will tell us, So let's go back to first.
That's me, sorry.
Okay.
Right, carry on.
Am I rambling on?
No. I'm loving it. It's really good. And I'm glad you mentioned the karma thing, because I think that's really important. Because I've heard it from various sources, people who've been involved with the cabal, you know, they're bag carriers. They say that they have this weird... Sorry, I can't talk now. Bye-bye. Right, carry on.
No, exactly. I have it from an insider. I would never have known about it had I not been informed. I wouldn't know it.
No, it's extraordinary.
So, yeah, it is. But once you start seeing it, it's like a blessing in disguise. But it's when you look back in history and you take all of these old stories, you know, like good lullabies and Disney stories, and back in the 1800s, all of these kids' stories and stuff. It's you will see in the Bible as well that it's in this matrix, whatever we're living in. It's as far as I know, one of the laws of this matrix is that evil has to present itself. It has to knock on our door. It has to show itself, even though under disguise. And then it's up to us. If we open the door, boom, the evil can just do whatever it wants. But if it doesn't show itself, it's not allowed.
The example of that I always give is the vampire. That in order for the vampire to come into your house, you have to give it permission. Now, where did that idea come from? It must have been in the kind of the consciousness that people must have recognized that evil does operate in this. Evil operates with our permission.
With our permission, exactly like that, which is also a blessing in disguise. Once you get it, it's like, well, I don't give my permission. No way am I going to do it. It doesn't matter how beautiful a package you make out of this with glossy, shiny, golden paper. I'm going to say no, absolutely no. And that's key, you know, for us to be able to stop this madness.
Shoes. Or wag the dog. Wag the dog, yeah, come on.
Okay, so these shoes I found like shoes on crime sites in it's almost 1,000 different crime sites that I've found shoes lying around without somebody in them. And I'm, you know, in the beginning, I was like, how is that possible? It's more or less always Nike shoes. How? I mean, the last time somebody tried to shoot me or hit me with a car or whatever, the shoe didn't just fly off, you know. The shoe sticks there. Sometimes if you have a really awful crash, you find a shoe but with a foot inside it. But normally the shoe doesn't get off. And here we're looking at hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cases, alleged airplane crashes, mass shootings, wars, you name it, shoes. And so I have this research vault that my whole life's work is put into. I call it my research vault. It's more than 5 terabyte of perfectly organized information. That is for sale if you want to support me. Please go to lightonconspiracies.com. During August, we have an offer, half the price if you sign up as a member for 1 year. Anyway, this is an absolute goldmine. I tell you, my whole life is in that, and so much of this information has been erased now. It's just gone from the internet, from libraries, it's unbelievable what is going on at the moment. Anyway, so shoe. So I was, what I've seen is that it seems almost like, at least from the Second World War, from the alleged Holocaust, shoes have become a symbol of death, something that is connected to death. We go to these alleged concentration camps. I've been to quite a few. You take the tour, you see a pile of shoes, and they say, that's the proof of 1 million dead people. I mean, I've been there with tears in my eyes, been really taken in by the whole situation. At the same time, if you look at it from a forensic point of view, no, it shows that there's a pile of shoes. That's it. How did it get there? Who did they belong to? You don't know, but it's not proof of anything. So the shoes, then you have the Korea War, the shoes were being also presented as proof of death or connected to death. You had the Vietnam War, shoes. It's like unbelievable. Balkan War, shoes. 6 Day War, you know, between Israel and Egypt. That's an interesting country for you, Israel, in these operations. But anyway, you have out in the midst of the desert, they said, oh, the Egyptian army got so scared that they escaped from this area and they left their boots. I tell you, have you ever been in a desert? If you take off your boots, your feet will be bacon. So that is the last thing you would ever take off. So what are they doing there? And so I did many shows about these shoes. I call them the soulless shoes of death. And I've just gone through hundreds of cases where after a while it's like, this is so bizarre. And so a Freemason contacted me anonymously and he said, one of the reasons this is used is because it's a ritual. You have, when these things happen, they're rituals when the Freemasons have a finger in them, which is very often. I'm not talking about Freemasons on a street level. I'm talking about when you come up in the power pyramid, the guys in the first 2-3 degree. They're fine. They're great people. You know, the brotherhood, we're doing charity. Yeah, great. Believe that if you want. And I mean, they love that. But once you start getting up and you start seeing who's driving the bus, oh my God, it gets as dark as it gets. So anyway, so he said one shoe off means just like they do in their own rituals, in their Freemasonic temples and so on. One shoe off means that this person is doing it voluntarily, often with one trouser leg pulled up as well. That's the same also Freemasonic thing. Then two shoes off means that this person is showing homage to the sacred space where this ritual is being carried out. So you will see over and over and over again, if it's like in a car attack in Melbourne or in Toronto or a mass shooting or an alleged drive-by shooting in Baltimore and a nightclub shooting or an airplane crash or the Bali bombing here, the Las Vegas mass shooting, what was the symbol? It was a pair of boots with the American flag on it. You know, what was the image that the New York Times had on the first page? A shoe and a stain, a blood stain. It's when once you start seeing the shoes, it's unbelievable how many they are. Anyway, so shoes. So I went out and I was talking about this. Yes, it's Freemasonic, blah, blah, blah. It comes, it goes back, the whole thing. There's a lot also from, we were talking about Israel before, the symbolism of shoes in that culture. Unbelievable. The name of the Holocaust is even Shua. But anyway, so then I did many, many interviews with the former Black Op private contractor Cody Snodgrass, who for more than 20 years was working in the Clinton administration, but as a Black Op independent contractor. He was like Mission Impossible, but for real.
Hello. I do hope you're enjoying this interview as much as I am. If you'd like to see the second half, please subscribe on Locals or Subscribestar. Thank you very much.